Blog Talk Radio.
Strawberries, cherries. You know, if I could just make a decent cup of coffee, I could relax.
Seriously, Brad, if you treat her right, she might make you a darn good employee.
I didn't know anything about the gold standard, I'm afraid, but I do love little kittens.
And you drank red wine from a box.
Not these ladies.
So raise your glass if you are mad.
They're smart, sexy, and opinionated. It's time for the Red Wine Show with your hosts, Jody and Diane. They're serving up a little wine with your wine on OFCON Radio.
Hello, good night, and good day. I am sitting here Googling police brutality as all of a sudden it was time for me to talk. So, so hopefully you guys will enjoy tonight's show. We're going to sit and discuss what's going on in Baltimore, and then if we have some time, we're going to touch on what's going on with the Clinton campaign. So, our first little bit is, obviously, unless you've been under a rock, you know that there was a recent death of somebody that had been arrested. In a 45-minute span, he was loaded into the quote-unquote paddy wagon, the vehicle that they load individuals in when they call for a van, taken kind of a, I don't know, for whatever reason, not directly to the station. They picked up somebody else along the way as well. And when he got out, by the time he got out, even though he'd been talking while he was in the van, was unable to talk, unresponsive, went into a coma, and then died. So there has been so much misinformation about what has gone on that we decided we were going to discuss it tonight. Because it's crazy after what happened in Ferguson and all the misinformation, how it seems like we learned nothing. The misinformation is just as crazy. The cop hate is just as nuts. You know, so we decided let's touch base on that a little bit tonight. So yeah. We have a clip. Do you have anything to add quick, Diane?
Oh, no. I'll add later.
Well, all right. So we have a clip to add play, and then we will discuss it.
So you can see, despite African Americans controlling Baltimore, the city's not prospering. The facts then dictate that racial persecution really isn't the problem in Baltimore. Something else is in play, and that something else is personal behavior. There is no linkage between what happened to Freddie Gray and torching buildings. Peaceful demonstrations get national attention. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. proved that beyond any doubt. So the big loser in the Baltimore riots are those that live in the poor neighborhoods, primarily African Americans. These idiotic thugs rioting and looting are hurting their own people.
Very true words.
Very true words. I was thinking it was going to have, this is my own fault because I should have listened to the clip before Steve played it. But I was thinking it was going to have the statistics in there too. But he did discuss the actually in Maryland how much money people actually make. But in this particular neighborhood, it's just sad. It's pathetically sad, the income. I think the median income is in the 30s, which is insane when the rest of the state is in the 70s.
Well, yeah, the median income there in Baltimore County is actually $32,000 a year lower than the income in the rest of the state, which is $20,000 and highest in the nation.
Right, right. And so there's something going on there. I know I had heard earlier on another radio show that they used to have more blue-collar jobs. And with the economy turning like it did, you have a lot of people out of work that used to be able to at least be off of the dole, so to speak, and be earning an income. So that has increased there. The other thing is, this is a very dangerous county, and it has been for years. It is extremely dangerous, and I think our Mr. Producer had some facts on that.
Well, it's the fifth how do I say this? It has the fifth highest murder in the nation per capita, which ranks, by the way, right up there with cities like Detroit. And it has had over, let's see, in 2013, over 50,000 violent crimes were committed, and of that, you had one person that got killed while in contact with the police, and they've had approximately 33 people that have had some kind of contact with the police from 2010 through 2014 that have died, not necessarily in custody, in contact with police, out of over 250,000 arrests.
So that's a low percentage.
I mean, that many people out of 250,000 could just die of a heart attack.
Or get hit by a bus.
Or not wear their seatbelt in the paddy wagon.
Right. I mean, I just think that, I've been called cold. But we don't know what happened in that paddy wagon. We just don't. And the rumors are rampant, and I think the investigation needs to take its course. I think it's very premature of people to already be calling the police officers murderers. Very premature. I mean, it was the same issue with the Darren Wilson and the Michael Brown case. He was called a murderer. It was proven he was not. And for people to jump and immediately presume that because you're a police officer, you're automatically guilty. We keep hearing about when all these thugs get arrested, they were such sweet boys. Oh, I don't understand how they could do this. But the benefit of doubt's never given to police officers. It doesn't make sense. Yes, there are bad, dirty police officers out there. And if anybody for one moment thinks that other police officers that go to work every day to do their job will tolerate these bad officers, I don't think so. I don't think so, because it's these other officers that are bad that gives the police department a bad name. Would you tolerate that?
No.
I wouldn't.
And as a matter of fact, we talked about this week with a couple police officers.
Absolutely. We talked to our resident favorite police officer, Chief Joe. Jody and I asked him specifically what happened. And I believe he said this on the air ago or 3 weeks ago when he was on. What happens when there's an officer-involved incident, regardless of whether someone dies, someone's injured, just period, an officer-involved incident, what happens? And he said clearly it is turned over to the state police. That is in small-town America. Today I have the opportunity to speak with the deputy chief of the capital city of Concord. And I asked him, because this is a city versus a little town, what happens if there's an officer-involved incident? And he told me that immediately the attorney general's office is notified, and the attorney general and the state police do the investigation. And he said clearly to me, do we necessarily agree with what their findings may be? No. He goes, however, you cannot give the appearance, even the remote appearance, that an investigation into your own police department is tainted by doing it yourself. You would not do that. I would not expect any other police department to do that. And he said, and the majority of major police departments out there do not perform investigations themselves. They don't get the evidence. It is strictly up to the attorney general's office, state attorney general, and the state police. So now basically when someone is saying that police officers cover for their own, you're basically now tainting the entire police force in your state. And that is what is very irritating to me. Your thoughts? Jody? Is anyone there?
Well,
did I shock you all?
I am here. You know what? For whatever reason tonight, just to let you guys know, all of a sudden I don't hear anything at all in my mic, and then it clicks in again, so I don't know what's happening. But so there you go.
You missed my rant? What?
No, I did. I did. I hear most of it, and then it just went away for 2 seconds. But I was going
like
to say, I do have ADD, so it could be that. Earlier, what happened, for those of you that aren't on Twitter, is, you know, what we kept noticing is all this anti-cops, and I think there's just as many rumors about the cops being brutal when, this has happened so often. Well, 10 years ago, there was an incident, so, I mean, I guess in a lot of police things happen, but like you just heard the statistics earlier in the show. And I would be interested, and that's what I was trying to do quick, comparing the statistics to L.A., to New York City, to fights, you know, just to kind of get a feel for it. It does show there have actually been more whites murdered, more white people murdered in Baltimore, shot, than blacks. So, you know, that's just an interesting little tidbit too. So it doesn't really fall into all the racism we're seeing. Also, I don't get all the racist remarks. Do you guys get
No.
how this is a racism issue? Because we're seeing so much of that too. The arguments that it's a racial thing, and then this is the greatest. It's a GOP thing. How is this a GOP thing? There hasn't been any GOP in that city since, what was it, 1967?
Hey, Di.
I don't. Yes.
And Jody, just by the way, don't use the T word.
T word.
Thug.
I'm going to use thug if I want because it's a violent criminal. So screw
apparently.
All PC police.
Yes. Yeah. Well. Now I'll tell you though. Apparently, according to John Gaskins III, who's an NAACP national board member, Ferguson native, and he game changer. And he was on CNN tonight, and he said the word thug is the new N word.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. So we are now so apparently the word thug is a race thing. But not only is it a race thing, it's a derogatory race thing that we're not allowed to use when describing those nice young lads that are out there destroying CVS pharmacies, robbing liquor stores, and driving cars through burning fires in the middle of the street.
Yeah, well, you know what I have to say to that? They can kiss my ass because I'm sick and tired of the PC police, and I'm not going to be a PC anymore, so screw them. Done. Enough. This is the whole reason why this country is in the issue it's in now. It's because of the PC crowd. Well, they can kiss off. That's my rant of the day.
Steve has corrected us in that in order to now be PC, the word is fug.
So it is not a TH word. It is an F word. So we have a new bad F word.
No, it's the new F word.
A fug. Too bad.
Living the fug life.
You know, enough is enough. But I will tell you one bright note that I saw was that mother that beat the shit, excuse my French, out of her kid because, you know, she didn't want him to become another Freddie Gray. And, you know, she's a single mother of 6 kids. And the fact that she took the time to go down there and beat some sense into him, literally, you know, shows a lot that, you know, maybe there is hope. And I don't care whether you are black or white, Asian, I don't care. But, you know, if my kid was down there, I would have done the same exact thing. You know, and I commend that
woman.
Well,
I wondered where the dads were.
Well, you know, sometimes.
Where are the fathers?
Yeah. I mean, the unfortunate part with, if you want to talk about statistics, is that unfortunately, black families seem to not have the two-parent household. The father's here when the kids are at a very young age, you know, or there is no father at all in their life. So where are the male role models? Where are they?
You know, you guys are the only ones asking this question. Even Fox News isn't asking this question. And this is like the big piece. Don't pay attention to that elephant in the room. Because the liberals of this country spent 50 years decimating the black family. It was probably a much stronger unit than the white family was even prior to that. And nobody's asking that question. You guys are asking the question. Nobody else is, and somebody really needs to. Why have we allowed liberals to decimate the black family to the point where you guys are asking where the males are, and the absolute normal reaction is they're just not there?
Well, I mean, not only are they trying to decimate the black family structure, but they're moving on to the family structure, period. I mean, you know, you have the feminist movement saying, who needs men? You know, it's a family is a family. I myself, this is my personal opinion, I don't care what a family makeup is as long as it's nurturing and loving. I know some people disagree with me, but I don't care what it is. But there needs to be role models. You know, many will say two women households, they have male role models for their sons, whether it's a close family friend, whether it's but someone that's a male role model, and it's just not there anymore.
Do you guys remember Murphy Brown? Do you guys remember the Murphy Brown thing?
I love Murphy Brown.
Do you remember? I think it was it Dan Quayle,
by the way,
that brought
that,
right? up? Oh, wait, of course we are. We're old. Do you
yes,
guys remember?
Yes, it was.
Wasn't it Dan Quayle?
Yep, it was.
And he brought up the single family thing, and he had attacked.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just attack. But really, feminists have hurt blacks because the minority.
Did she
apparently it's not just her earplugs that are going in and out. Apparently the microphone's going out as well.
Well, I think what she's trying to say, is she still trying to speak?
You got. Wait a minute. Before you do this, you got to ditch the Yankee accent there.
I'm going to try to pronounce my R's. It just doesn't work with a Boston mouth. I'm sorry. But I think what she's trying to say is the feminists have ruined the family structure, and you know, for the blacks, you notice though that Hispanics in this country, the Asians in this country, the family structure is so important to the point that they have the multi-generations living in the same household. You don't find that in black households, which, you know, is sad because, you know, they also have strong family ties. And I should say you don't find that maybe in the North. In the South, I think you find it more. Am I correct? I mean, I haven't really been down South. What do you think, Hammy?
Look, I grew up in the South during the time of, you know, the whole change, right? In the whole civil rights. And I will tell you guys, when I was younger, there were still segregated bathrooms. There were segregated portions, waiting rooms and doctor's offices and such. But there was one thing that was in question, and that was the strength of the black family. I said the other day about this this lady that dragged her son off the street that was throwing bricks at the cop. And I said, you know, I grew up around those ladies. They're salt of the earth. Okay, you didn't want to mess with those women. They really were, you know, some strong people of strong character, and that was exhibited there. You know, black mothers were very much a part of that family. There was never a question about it. And the liberals have done their best to families in general, but when you create a perpetual victimhood and a perpetual welfare state, where it is encouraged That you this family unit doesn't matter. Government's going to take care of you, whatever you do. And oh, by the way, fathers, you have no responsibility. If you skip town or you go someplace else, nobody's going to come after you and hold your feet to the fire. We'll take care of, you know, the kids left behind. There's absolutely no way for people to take any responsibility. And one of the things that that I was seeing on CNN, they were saying this whole idea of even trying to, you know, change this word thug around. Right, all of this is a constant thing, and excusing behaviors. All of this is a constant attempt to remove responsibility from anybody.
Oh, absolutely. And a thug, I'm sorry, thugs don't just apply to a color. A thug is a thug is a thug, whether they're black, white, Asian, Russian, German, whatever. It's still a thug. If you commit crimes against people and things and property, you're a thug. Period.
Yeah.
You know, and
I'm
people
back.
That are, oh, hello.
And rejoice because they don't have to listen to me anymore.
I'm sorry, Jody, but I cannot pronounce my R's. I tried.
I don't even know what. Did you guys even hear anything I said about Dan Quayle? Who, you know, whatever.
Dan Quayle and then you're gone. But yes, Dan Quayle was the one that made the comment for MercyCon, and everybody flipped a gourd. And it's probably the reason why Daddy Bush didn't win the second term of Thursday.
Probably. And what I was going to say is there's no accountability on the left for feminists or Democrats in what they have done to the black family. There is no accountability, and there should be. Because if it weren't for them saying that government can replace fathers, I don't know that we'd be in this huge mess. I think there would still be an issue, but I don't think it would be nearly as big an issue.
You know, I agree. And I mean, I have to sit there and say, you know, and I probably this is one of my guilty pleasures, but I sometimes watch the Maury show and I just my mouth drops every time, you know. You're one of 10 that could be the baby daddy. Are you kidding me? Who said that? I mean, but the thing is, you know, you question kids who don't live in areas where they're exposed to, you know, multicultural families, all right? And they watch the Maury show. Well, what are you going to think after watching the Maury show or Jerry Springer or something like that? You're going to sit there and think that they have no morals. Or you're going to sit there and think, oh, you know, of course they're living off the system because they just keep having babies. And that's not fair. It's not fair because there are a lot of fantastic families that are out there that care about their kids. But you know what? The Democrats just want to keep them down. Instead of giving them, I would much rather say, instead of giving these mothers welfare money time in and time out, pay for her college education so she can get a job and get herself out of there. I would much rather see money go towards something like that than welfare to keep them down.
I would actually like to see money go towards Norplant. I mean, imagine the difference if we suddenly took an entire generation, an entire, like, every 14-year-old girl right now in olive communities in many communities and made a difference in whether or not they were even able to get pregnant. But beyond that, and although Obamacare makes birth control, you know that that's not happening. There is a reason that the abortion clinics are in these neighborhoods as well. It's very sad. But if you could think that, what if they had community college opportunities for parents at a young age, what difference would that make in one generation?
I think if they had the opportunity to, and it needs to start young, where they're taught you can be anything you want to be. And somewhere along the line, that message gets lost. And I don't know where it's getting lost, but, you know, when you go to school, first, second grade, you're the first thing you want to be when you grow up, when you start school, is you say, I'm going to be a teacher. And then as
right.
your horizons expand, it becomes, I'm going to be an astronaut. I'm going to be a police officer. I'm going to be a fireman. Where along the line, because, you know, I keep hearing about the poor schools and all that stuff, and I'm sorry, but, you know, I know school budgets in and out, and I'm sorry. We live in a very, very poor school district in the town that I am in, yet we have kids at our high school that are getting full scholarships to Notre Dame. They're getting, and we're a little hick town. They're getting full scholarships to, like, Ivy League schools because from the bottom up, you have teachers, and these teachers might not make a lot of money. We're telling these kids, you can be whatever you want to be. Our robotics team, small town, like I said before, was in the top 90 at the World Championships in St. Louis last weekend of the entire world, 90 teams out of, I think, 400 or 500 teams. All you need is someone to say, you can do it, and you can. It should be... Well, endless what your opportunities are. And somewhere in these inner schools, they're not getting that message, and I'm not understanding why.
Well, I wonder, too. Seriously, I'm very poor area.
You were what?
Where I live now, it certainly wasn't. It was lower middle class. But,
right.
That neighborhood where that whole farm community was at, I mean, it just wasn't, it's funny because you knew that a lot of people didn't have money, but there wasn't this attitude of entitlement, and there wasn't this of just giving up. If you didn't go to college, then you knew you had to go get a job and do something. I don't, anyone that I went to school with that just thought, I'm just going to live on the government. And we were, by the United States standards, we were poor. So to me, it's very interesting. I mean, many of my friends had Pell Grant go to college. I had to pay for my own school, and my parents helped out with some, but I had to get a loan, and my husband had to get a loan. And so it just took us years to pay that off, but you didn't even think of not going. It was just what you had to do. So I don't know. I just think that all of those children knew that college wasn't an option. It was a must. I'm wondering if that would change things as well.
I mean, I love the ideas of some of the philanthropists that go in and they sit there and they pick a class and they say, okay, if you guys achieve this, by the time you graduate, I will pay for everybody's college education. They have a goal. And, you know, 95%
right.
of those kids in the particular class that they chose went on to go to college. You know, I keep hearing about, you know, Obama's plan for the community college and all that stuff, whatever, but that plan means nothing if that child is not, you know, has the seed of the thought in his mind that I can go to college and I can be something. If he doesn't have that, you know, then they will be working at the McDonald's or wherever else. And you know, and that's not a color-based comment. That is a urban-based comment because both blacks and whites live in the urban areas.
Right,
you know,
right.
I
don't
think
this is...
I wonder, where's the message at those inner city schools getting lost? You know, there's
yeah,
a bunch
I agree.
Of fantastic
again,
teachers
I don't...
that are in there.
Is it, do you think it's a black and white issue, or do you think it's just a socioeconomic issue?
I think it's definitely socioeconomic. You
That's
know,
what I think.
You keep hearing that teachers in the urban districts... you know, that the kids just aren't getting an education. Well, you know what? Quite frankly, in the urban district, those teachers are some of the highest paid teachers in the state. So you can't sit
right,
there and tell me.
And the highest educated.
Exactly. But you can't tell me that you know, that they're teaching, you know, kids that you know are deemed unteachable. Those kids, when they start school, you know, if they have special needs, then they need to be screened. Then they need to get into the proper programs or the proper IEPs. That's what causes a lot of kids that are struggling in early ages, because if you find out the problems at an early age, by the time they're in third or fourth grade, 9 out of 10 times, they won't need those accommodations anymore. As long as it's caught
okay,
early.
Okay, let's pick back up on this, because
yeah.
I want to talk about that. So let's pick that. We're going to go to a break quick, and we will be right back.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtledoves. I'd like to teach the world to sing. Sing with me. Perfect harmony, perfect harmony. I'd like to buy the world a home and keep it company.
Hi, y'all. This is Laura Lee Majernik, host of the Down and Dirty Sports Show here on AltCon, and I want to tell you about the sisterhood at NFLfemale.com. Smart women, smart football. Come have fun with us. NFLfemales.com.
You're listening to The Red Wine Show. Would you like to talk with us? Dial 646-716-7039 and talk with us live. Right here on AltCon Radio.
And we are back from our break, Jody. Are you there?
I am. I'm actually here. Yay!
I know, it's wonderful news. So what are we going to talk about?
I was just going to say, you had touched on the schools, and I had heard earlier on another news show, many of the teachers in the Baltimore area have their master's degree. So they should be very equipped in teaching difficulties with IEP issues. The other thing is, we all know now from studies, many things, by third grade and how kiddos are going to be a success or not. So I don't understand why in a clinically controlled area who love their teachers and love dollars, why their K through 8 program isn't one of the best in the nation. So that is my thing. I guess what I really want people to get out of this is, rumors aside, whether the guy had a broken neck, well, it turns out he didn't have a broken neck. Whether the guy had a rap sheet, well, yeah, he really did. And he didn't. Did he run? Some witnesses say he did. The cops say he didn't. They said he went into custody without much incident. We don't know any of these facts. What we do know is that there is an issue of perception that people are frustrated in this neighborhood to the point where they feel that it's us against them. And with an us against them, it just amazes me how you have the left suddenly left against right and rich against poor. I am so just completely to that. We're never going to fix these poor people's lives. All we're doing is just keep, we're keeping the same policies that they've had years.
That have proven not to work.
Broken. Exactly. Exactly. And it is so completely.
What I thought was very interesting to me was the fact that when the former governor O'Malley came back, you know, to sit there when the riots were happening, and the residents were blaming him because apparently when he was mayor, he had a zero tolerance policy for crime. The crime rates dropped dramatically, and you know they're basically blaming him for the police being supposedly brutal and they're you know and overzealous. So here you have someone that is potentially running for president on the Democratic ticket, and people are blaming him for police brutality because he came out with a zero tolerance when he was the mayor of Baltimore and made it a safer place, apparently. And speaking of mayors, okay.
Yes.
There's someone, Stephanie, whatever her name is, who probably would get the award for the worst mayor in the United States of America, comments that she made about giving protesters a space to destroy. Whether it was a slip of the tongue or not, and I tend to say not, the fact is the police stood down. I suspect that order came from Obama. Because apparently she had conversation with him before she even bothered to speak to the governor. And, you know, it took her, 4 hours to even call the governor to ask for a state of emergency? So meanwhile, you have neighborhoods that were destroyed. Yes.
That is Stephanie Coldfish Rawlings hyphen Blake. Okay, just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Yes, I'll stick with the Stephanie whatever. I knew the first name. You know, the whole timeline is so off. I don't know if you agree.
Right.
But
totally. And we have Jay Deep as well. I want to hear about it.
I mean, to me, watching her news conferences when she spoke, she was extremely, and I've seen a lot of officials speak, she seemed unprepared. She seemed very inexperienced. In way over her head, and I really honestly don't think she expected what happened to happen, although she had to have known it was going to happen. Everybody else did. I don't know, what do you think? Was she kind of like, you know, the usual Obama type with your head in the sand, and if I don't bother to look, it's going to go away?
What do you think,
lady? Was that to me, ladies?
Sure.
Yes, to you.
Well, good evening. First of all, I want to say I am a huge fan of the show. And for anybody who is catching this tonight for the first time, if you go anywhere else, you're doing it wrong.
I'm blushing.
To speak to the mayor of Baltimore specifically, it doesn't matter that it's Stephanie whatever. I mean, you could plug in Mr. X and Mr. Y from the last 40 or 50 years. It's policy prescriptions. And, you know, the more that executives at any level are willing to cede their power to the next highest authority above them, going back to the point of the first call was to the White House or to the administration. But I think, you know, there's two things that have really caught me watching this in the last 72 hours that, to my mind, really put a lie to and destroy completely the narrative of the left, which is that in urban communities that are economically underserved or economically underperforming or have higher unemployment rates or what have you, the progressive narrative is that, listen, that's the way that it is, it's nobody's problem, and it's a victim mentality. Then I take a look at that mother who beat her son almost senseless in the middle of the street to bring him back home. And there's a small part in that interview that really, really, really stopped me cold. It wasn't that she had six kids, and it wasn't that she was a single mother. It's that in there, when she was talking about getting her son off the street, she goes, because I don't do things like that anymore. So all of a sudden it hit me that here is somebody who is the poster child for what the left puts up as victim mentality. And the poster child for, oh, listen, it's the forces within our society that are making it that way. No, she was a free individual, and through her choices and hard work, was able to turn it around. And what really linked it to me is I do contract consulting work in the financial world in my other job. So I had in between contracts, and a friend of mine had picked me up who was a vice principal at one of the worst inner city schools in New York City. And basically it was, look, just come in and make sure that the kids don't burn the school to the ground and we'll pay it. I said, great. So I came and I used to make him a deal. If you pay attention to me for half the class, for the second half of the class, we'll talk about whatever you want. So you had kids in this classroom who couldn't spell IBM. They couldn't add two and two together. But when we got to the second half of the conversation, it was when Obama was running against Hillary Clinton. These kids were more plugged into what was going on in Iraq and Afghanistan than your average political pundit. And it was because in that community, you had people that were coming home and speaking to them. And I think that if you take a look at people in these communities, especially the youth who seem to, for whatever reason, the progressives want to broad brush and give an excuse to, number one, they're not lost. Number two, they're a lot more plugged into certain things geopolitically than people give them credit for. And number three, if you take a look at that mother with her son, to me, I mean, those were just examples in the 72 hours that just deconstructed the last 100 years of the argument for policies that have been implemented in cities like Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's amazing to me that no one on the left sees that.
Of course they see it. See, look, you know what the difference between, to my mind, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, to my mind, and the reason that I've become more politically active than I have been, is that I think the difference between the right and the left is the left has effectively weaponized politics. The right hasn't and does not realize that they are literally on a battlefield of ideas, which by definition make it a war. You know, conservatives are like the rest of us. You know, we're doing our job, we're making our money, we're paying our taxes way too damn much, and then you pop up and you go, what? Gay marriage? Oh, okay, all right, let's see, what's going on with that? Okay, then you go down, oh, and then another fire pops up. Oh, look, everybody's coming over the border. And we look at it as individual fires popping up, and why don't these silly progressives understand the Constitution? It's a short, succinct document. They understand it. They understand it very well. They disagree with it. And so we catch up to the point that these aren't individual fires and things that are popping up policy-wise, but for almost 100 years, a concerted playbook and effort, then we're continually going to be one step behind, in my opinion.
Oh, I 100% agree, and you have many, we'll say the vast majority of states that no longer require civics, you will find is liberal states. I mean, it should be a mandatory graduation requirement. It is in our state here. The kids, you know, they basically take a citizenship test, and they are shocked the first time they take it that they can't pass it.
Well, you know, I've been making the point forever that, you know, people used to be like, oh, well, you know, it's just the old baby boomers in the 60s hippies, and that's why we got rid of civics. And no, that's not why they don't teach civics anymore. I mean, because if you get to a point where you can publicly educate the majority of your society who doesn't understand the basic mechanics of government, you know, look, to my mind, they stopped teaching civics about 20 or 30 years ago, right? So then
right,
you say, okay,
right.
So what's the impetus behind that? To basically have an undereducated population who doesn't understand what's going on within the levers of government. What I found very interesting is I have a friend of mine who is a New York City middle school English teacher. I'm talking 7th and 8th graders, okay? He came to me 2 years ago, and we're hanging out here in the house, and he goes, you know, we're not allowed to give vocabulary quizzes anymore. 7th and 8th grade. I said, what? He said, no. I said, well, what do you mean you can't give vocabulary quizzes? No, we can't. I'm like, well, then how the hell do kids understand what the meaning of words and language are? He goes, well, there's this new thing, and it's reading comprehension, and the kids are to infer it. So think about it. This is a 100-year-long war by the left. They took 20 to 30 years removing civics from public education, and you want to know what? Because the right and conservatives don't realize that they're in a war, they're taking a shot at language, literally. I mean, think about how much you guys talk about on the show, how much of a joke progressive language is. Bill Clinton, what the definition of is. You can no longer, in certain liberal city schools, you can't give vocabulary tests. So now you're going to have people who don't understand civics that you can basically read the foreign language to.
Well, and I think that that happens in everything. There's a dumbing down in religion. There's a dummy. Hillary Clinton just made a comment that we have to change. We have to change how churches are teaching religious education. In other words, you need to change it to the state. It shouldn't be actually teaching what the word says. You have some religions that take the Bible very seriously and take word for word or have a way that they do it. And it should be freedom of religion. But again, just like we're dumbing down schools, like we're dumbing down our news media, we're going to sit and talk about deflated footballs and Kim Kardashian's tush. We're not going to talk about real issues. You know, if you hear our show, you hear constantly we discuss trafficking. We don't even – how many people know in the United States that there is trafficking going on a daily basis? I mean, besides –
900,000 kids.
That's the whole point. That's where they want the public. Understand something. You have people of Hillary Clinton's era and age, okay? Whether you want to call them Democrat or you want to call them liberal or you want to call them progressive. You want to know what? Let's take Michigan J-Frog. Let's take Elijah Cummings, one of my absolute favorites. One of my absolute favorites, okay? This man who did great things in the 60s in the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement, okay, has had over 40 years inside the highest power of the United States government. And there were churches burning in Baltimore last night, 50 years later, the same way that there was when he was marching in the streets. And he's had over four decades of his policy prescriptions. Yet we're still seeing the same churches burned in the same city.
Hey, J.D., I tell you something. I said that on Twitter today that under this administration, we've gone back 5 years. You just saw what, right?
Yeah.
On Monday night. I'll tell you something else you were saying. You know, everyone to blame this on this interaction with police and distrust police and these poor kids. They have nothing to look to in life and some of that, but they call it a morale issue, it's a moral issue. We have a moral, like you said, they've taken, you know, the family out, they've taken responsibility out, they've replaced that with, again, this victim place that take care of you owe us nothing. Nothing's your fault. You do what you want. There's a moral problem. There's the absolute moral problem. And it's going to be by doing government, you know, big daddy approach to the downtown. And one of the bring up earlier, 68%, and everybody wants to say it's not race. It's not race. Fortunately, it evidences itself that way. 68% of the population of Baltimore is black. 90% of violent crime in Baltimore is committed by blacks. There's a moral problem.
No, there definitely is. And there's a bigger issue than that because you have, and again, you have, to my mind, since the death of Martin Luther King, you have had nothing but failed civic leadership on a national level in that community because they have wanted, because you know what? There's no money in the cure. There's money in the treatment. You know,
you're right?
Right. So to my mind, and this is how we never have the conversation, because when you use race as a weapon, and you allow these, you know, the Praetorian Guard, the race hustlers, whether it's Sharpton or Jackson or whoever it is, you know, they're going to stand guard at the top of that golden mountain of cash. And to me, you can't get past and have a serious conversation because, to me, it's a larger conversation. To me, it's a larger issue than even what's literally going on in the streets of Baltimore. We as a society have a problem when a segment of our population values human life so cheaply. It's that simple. The cost of a human life, yours, Jody, yours, Diane, yours, Stephen, is less in certain parts of this country and in certain communities than it is where you stand right now. And that's a scary issue. That is a scary issue. That's not 5,000 people looting 600 or 700 stores. That is, we're getting to a point where there are segments of society who say life is worth $23 to shoot you over on a street corner. Black,
well,
white, purple, or indifferent, you know?
And I think, you know, we had Bias Girl on one of our shows a while back, and she was tweeting today. She had a great point of that, where is the responsibility on the Democratic Party for not valuing these inner cities? And if you walk in and you see how horrible some of these projects are and how absolutely awful things are in these cities, shame on anyone. Mayor, governor, shame on anyone that's allowing that to happen in the year 2015. And I think she's spot on. Hey, we have Beaker here as well.
Oh, get him. Get him on. But before I jump off for you to bring him on, the point to make to that, I want you to think about it from a Democratic politician's point of view. Why in the hell would you vest any kind of cure or build into the community where no matter what you do, you're guaranteed a 90-plus percent voting percentage when you go to the polls?
Yeah, and that's a sad thing. That's a sad thing. Okay, well, thank you so much, J.D., for calling.
Thank
you. We love hearing you.
No worries.
Hey,
thanks,
everybody.
Ladies.
J.D. and Stacy have a great show. They actually have two. J.D., why don't you give us where you're at?
Tuesday night, 10 p.m. on over at War Radio, and Sunday mornings, 11 a.m., Game On and Bloody Marys in Broadsheet. But don't crowd your head with that, kids. Listen to Jody and Diane on the Red Wine, and when Hanley jumps in, he's the voice of wisdom, baby. So everybody listen real intently for the whole thing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's getting him a free drink at Right Online.
All right.
It works for me. I'll see you guys later.
Bye. Hey, Beaker.
Well, hello there. How are you?
Hello.
We are so good. Thanks for calling. What did you want to add tonight?
I had a very, very important question for the panel. I want to know what YouTube video was the cause of all the problems in Baltimore.
What difference does it make? What difference
does brilliant.
It make, Beaker?
It's got to be. Can't
but
be
I did just read online. Did you guys just see where they said that they recovered IEDs?
Yes,
from
homemade IED Monday night.
So, you know, I guess maybe it was a video because that's what we've heard. That's how, you know, weapons are brought, you know, at a mass level like that. It has to be from a video. So,
well, what I heard that was even more disturbing, which is an article that I read today, was that basically when you have the social media arm of ISIS that is basically reaching out to they reached out to the people of Ferguson, and they're reaching out to the people of Baltimore, which is a prime area to get into it. And they're basically saying, we're coming, and we have this leadership that's basically allowing
it. Yeah, we'll take care of you. Yeah.
You know, what condition is this country in? I have to say that Jody and I are the same age, if I can. In 48 years... of which I probably only remember 38 when I, you know, since 10 and under, you're watching Scooby-Doo. You know, I've never seen, and I wasn't around in the 60s when there was the riots and, you know, didn't really remember any of them in the 70s because I was still little, you know, as I said, watching Scooby-Doo. But I've never seen the country in the condition that it's in now. Never. And it's disturbing.
you have to question yourself what can be done to help or prevent this. And yes, we all know we need to get rid of the current leadership. The big cities that are liberal, it's not working in Detroit. Baltimore is going to end up losing their middle class again. And what happens, you know, when the middle class moves, you get Detroit number two, where there's nothing to support the infrastructure. And that's exactly what's going to happen in Baltimore, because they'll find somewhere else to go. And,
yeah,
and
it's,
can this
it's
country
scary.
Recover? Can this country recover?
It's
you know?
Kind of interesting to me, because I look at even the flip side of, I mean, yes, we could take hours and hours pointing out how screwed up and how complicit they are in creating this. And a lot of times, you know, the right will sit back and wring their hands or wash their hands and just say, you know, oh, this is just so messed up. You know, can you believe this? And kind of take the, you know, what do you do? They're just that stupid. But, you know, aside from Rand Paul, can you think of another Republican who's really getting out there and trying to engage some of these populations?
I don't know. Is Marco Rubio? I heard he was going to. But you are right. Rand Paul, whether people like him or not, has been very smart in trying to get into places Republicans normally don't go.
Because
I guess my question is, why don't they normally go there? What's
you're
stopping
right, right.
them from going there? There's nothing
they shouldn't
to stop
automatically,
them.
Well, first of all, it should not be anyone. Nobody should automatically assume that this is a canned voting block. And that's what happens. Teachers shouldn't be a canned voting block for the left, or nothing will ever change for them. And the and minorities shouldn't just vote Democrat down the line, or nothing will change for them, because nobody's courting them to get their vote. So it's one of those things. I just wanted to break here quick. Thank you, Beaker, for calling in. We really appreciate you listening to us, because we know you such a great, great, smart man. I just love him. And in my mind, whenever he tweets, I always think that he sounds like Fraser Crane. So when I actually hear his voice,
I say, hello, I'm listening. Or no, hello, Seattle, I'm listening.
So, thank you for calling. Even you
my
know,
pleasure.
With your real voice.
y'all take care.
Tonight, they were just saying that one of the things that just came out, I think it was the Washington Post, that they're saying in our chat room here, quick before we wrap up, that the Washington Post prisoner that was in there is saying that while Freddie Gray was in the van, there he was banging on the walls. So his neck couldn't have been broken if he's screaming and banging on the walls. So that just goes to show you again, we need to wait for Friday for the facts to come out. So we didn't get to Hillary tonight, folks, so I'm sorry about that. Dan, where can we find you on Twitter?
At DMB 1031. And the red wine.
The red wine. You can find me at APL Mom. And we look forward to hearing you guys next week. Remember, it's our human trafficking episode. So Laura Lee will be back joining us with her report on her Dallas show that she, or excuse me, event that she just went to, and we'll be discussing human trafficking. And of course, Katie Johnson will be back with us as well. So thanks, you guys, for joining in tonight, and we look forward to hearing your tweets or your messages. It says here, okay, Mr. Producer, step in and tell me your shows.
Oh, so we've got a special show with NFL Female this Saturday night with Laura Lee. She's going to be on it. She's down in Dirty Sports, and I believe it's either going to be 9 or 10 o'clock. She'll be doing some live shows from Right Online this weekend. So look forward to everyone listening to that.
Awesome. Oh, good. Well, yeah, that I can't believe Right Online's already this weekend. You will have fun, and you have to buy JD that drink.
And have a great week, everybody, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah.